Give it up for it seems a bunch of badasses, if you know what I mean. They're coming out of the sky, out of the sea, and on land, gonna take it to the enemy. Lock it low, boys. Time to explode, boys. Just make sure you get home, boys. They got your back, the pride of the fleet, the pipe swinging frogman. You're the UGT. They don't do it for the money, they do it for the country. It's not about the fame. They do it for the USA. Ooh, yeah. This is the big boys club. Nobody does it quite the way a skill team done. Clean in, clean out. The boys are the best, and they'll be called before your shells hit the deck. So if you see a bald man coming with guns, you better reconsider whose side you're on. These boys are ghosts, team of the Reaper, and they'll be more than happy to deliver you back to your maker. They don't do it for the money, they do it for the country. It's not about the fame. They do it for the USA. They do it for the USA. They do it for the USA.
Because the only easy day was yesterday.
Come on! They don't do it for the money, they do it for the country. It's not about the fame. They do it for the U.S. They do it for the U.S. They do it for the USA.
For the money, they do it for the country. It's not about the fame. They do it for the USA. They don't do it for the money. They do it for the country. It's not about the fame. They do it for the USA.
They don't do it for the money. They do it for the country. It's not about the fame. They do it for the USA. Lock it low, boys. Time to explode, boys. Make sure you get home, boys. They got your back, the pride of the fleet, the pipe swinging frogmen of the UGT.
A look at the situation report for September 25th. Going to bring Joe Dolly on just a second here. A couple of admin notes. That was a little Madison Wright. That song's called Lock and Load. Actually, you know, you got a shout out to Stuart for a good catalog. Man, I never even heard of him until Stuart sent that over to me. So, and I played it on Monday just because, well, yeah. Stuart waited like 3 months for a buffer and a spring for a 308 that I couldn't get in. So I know, hard to believe, right? Anyway, so thanks, Stuart, for that. Couple admin notes. Tomorrow morning, I'll be on Coffee and a Mic again, this time with Alex Craner. If you didn't see the show yesterday, we did a show yesterday, Matt Brackett and I. And then Friday, I'm going to be on Tommy's podcast to talk through the nuke business, talk through how that situation works and how they source people for not just the nuke business, but how that whole system works. We may talk AI too. So more to come on that. Tonight, we're going to talk about community defense, and I've asked Joe to come on. Joe, thanks for jumping on. You know, we've done how many shows together, and I've never really done a show with just you, so I figured it was about time.
So, right? I mean, I'm fun. Why not, right?
So, it's the shirt, man. I'm telling you, it's the shirt. So, dude, I got like 10 pictures today of people wearing these shirts. It cracks me up.
I know. These shirts are awesome, man. They rock.
Super cool. So,
we were in the middle of moving when you sent it. So when I popped into the house after teaching a field craft class down at NC Scouts place, the shirt was there. I was like, yeah, timing is everything. So
nice, man. Nice. Well, we've only had one casualty. So I sent one out. It didn't get there. So I got to resend one shirt. But out of all the shirts I've sent to the crew, that's the only one that did make it. So, hey, that's success. So I'm going to let you tee this up because we talked about community defense. We've talked about a bunch of other things, but we've never really gone into detail of what that means. So without, right, you know, compromising your class, I want to talk through this just to give people a framework of why we're talking about it and why it's going to be so important in the future. So I'll just let you start there.
Yeah, what's actually cool is the community security operations class or community defense. The class is based on my third book, Defensive Operations. After I wrote the first two books, I gave my readers a poll. And I said, would you rather hear about a couple different topics, or would you rather hear about how to secure a neighborhood, compound, farm, or whatever from what's coming? And overwhelmingly, everyone wanted to know how to set up a defensive operation for your own little place, whatever it is. So decided to write the book on that. And quite frankly, it immediately came out as a chance to build a class around it. So when I was in the Marine Corps, I was a military policeman, and you might think, oh, that's not a very cool guy job. No, but it applies directly to what we're talking about. It's about setting up checkpoints or roadblocks. It's about protecting critical assets like your neighborhood, conducting local security patrols, and doing all of the things in a contested environment or a hostile environment to protect your neighborhood. So I kind of broke all those skills down into the book and then decided, let's take out the most important ones, the things that most people will actually be doing. Everyone wants to get into all the cool guy shooting classes and CQB classes because the boog is coming or whatever they want to call it, right? But let's be honest, 90% of the time, you're going to be manning a checkpoint at the front of your neighborhood trying to keep the bad guys out. So we decided to design a course that is like, what does that look like? How do we set it up? How do we run that tactically? And then we spend a good chunk of the course running scenarios through these various things. Like, hey, so you got your checkpoint set up. That's cool. Now here comes a guy telling you his wife's down at the end of the road and injured. Or here comes a guy trying to talk his way in who might potentially be hostile. We kind of give him a chance to role play all those interactions and see some real world situations that have developed through various areas all over the world, including the 2020 riots here, the 2021 KwaZulu-Natal riots in South Africa, and operations, security operations in Iraq, Afghanistan, and the former Yugoslavia. All these different things that have happened in life that I said, hey, it'd be cool if the guys around here were training on that. So we broke it down and we put together a great course on it to develop those solid skills for people.
So with that in mind, I think the question of the day is, you know, well, let me have a comment first. So in Iraq, what do? They set up checkpoints everywhere. The Kurds did it. The Iraqi police did it. Iraqi National Guard did it. The Iraqi army did it. You know, we consider holding an area with troops. We spread the troops out across the area. They consider holding an area through manning checkpoints. The reality is, in your community, you're not going to be sitting there with combat trained people. So you're going to need to come up with ways to vet the entry and exit points and to route people out of your area, especially people that are sick, that are looking for food, that are looking to cause harm. There's going to be all types, right? So you're making the assumption that those folks that come to your checkpoints are going to be hostile until proven otherwise. And, you know, it's not just about the defensive posture of the community, right? It's more about you're setting the mindset, you're setting conditions for defense. It's not just we're going to man checkpoints and we're going to defend our area. You have to, and this is a key point that I've tried to, you know, express multiple sit reps. This situation we're walking into is an unknown for everybody. And there's no preconceived notions in your head about how this is going to develop, how this is going to go. what the government's role in this is going to be. You have no idea. So you're not just setting conditions for your community. You're setting, you're getting your minds, your headspace right. You're getting your situation awareness right. And you're training everybody else in your community to be ready for anything. Right? Did I encapsulate that correctly?
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, most of the class isn't necessarily about running a traditional U.S. military style checkpoint. It's more of setting up something to be seen by others. So, for example, if I'm a group that's checking out an area to decide if I want to go in and raid these homes, but I see that they're running checkpoints out on the main highway, they've got a pretty strong entry control point that's well fortified. They're running local security patrols. They're out responding to incidents with some sort of an armed force, no matter how small it is. I'm going to pick a different area to launch my attacks. So it's sort of the porcupine theory, right? When do dogs bite porcupines? Do they bite them when their quills are out or when their quills are down? If you're walking around and your quills are down, you look like a victim. The dog looks going to come take a bite out of it. However, if the quills are out and you're looking pretty dangerous, the dog's not going to take a bite. And that's kind of the concept we talk about in this class. You can hunker down in your house and hope the bad guys don't come to you and fight them at your mailbox. Or would you rather fight them a half mile down the road at the checkpoint that leads here? Honestly, I'd rather fight them down the road. That way they're not in my front yard when we start shooting. So having some sort of a organized method and plan to how you're going to defend your neighborhood or your farm or whatever is really the key point of the class. And I'll be honest, we had a bunch of guys in it. They said that the best part about it was not just the practical exercises, but the time spent together around the campfire at the end of the day, trading stories and talking to each other about it. And honestly, there was a rancher in my class who is from the border region. And I'm not gonna name names or say specifically where, but he has to run these type of operations every single day right now on his ranch, or he'll be overrun by illegals. They're running checkpoints at the beginning of their ranch. They're running observation posts at night, and they're running patrols to catch these people coming across. So it's not that long of a shot that you might need them. Parts of America need them right now. And when a riot comes up and they're coming down your street, wouldn't it be better to know how to properly set up a roadblock at the end of the street to turn those folks away? It worked in KwaZulu-Natal in 2021, and it can work here too.
Yeah. And the other thing that I, you know, one of the things that I picked out of her app, which I thought was priceless, was the fact that there was no substitute for knowing who belongs in your community. And absolutely. I watched the Iraqis do it, and they were exceptional, right? They knew who belonged there. They knew who didn't belong there. And they even knew which street this person was supposed to live on and who their parents were and who their relatives were. And they didn't mess around. If they didn't know you, they didn't recognize you, they threw you out of their neighborhood. Like, what are you doing here? They would confront you with a group of armed men, and they would ask you, who are you and what are you doing here, right? Not you as soldiers, because of course we were always armed. They knew exactly who we were and what we were doing there. But the Iraqi generals, especially in the Sunni neighborhoods, they would organize all the military males. They would do roving patrols. They would have armed people at the strategic points around their community, especially, and they would work with the sheikhs too. A sheikh is a tribal leader. Tribes are still a big thing in the Middle East. And they would pick key parts of the terrain. You know, like, we haven't talked terrain yet, which is what I'm teeing up here, right? So it's not just about where the checkpoints, where your, you know, roving patrols are going to be your checkpoints. You're looking at key terrain around your area. Because I watched these guys, they were masters at it. They would figure out where the absolute key terrain was, where the infiltration, exfiltration points were into their community. And they would literally man those with automatic weapons. They would have a quick reaction force. We wouldn't call it a quick reaction force, but they would call it a quick reaction force. And it was amazing how organized they were, even in what was relatively peaceful areas. They didn't mess around. And it's because we had so many different people coming in and out of the community and coming in and out of the country from all parts of the Middle East, right? All the crazies were filtering in all the time. So we were dealing with all kinds of foreign nationals that were you know, sometimes peaceful, sometimes not peaceful with the, you know, the local population. So they took things upon themselves because they couldn't rely on the police and the military to step in and defend those areas. So
and that's exactly the purpose of the course. And what we learn is, hey, this is what's worked in other collapsed societies, Iraq being one, Afghanistan being another, Yugoslavia. Boy, Katrina, we talk a lot about Hurricane Katrina in this class. And some of the unconstitutional things the police did and the National Guard did that we could perhaps fight back against and learn how to handle it. But it's really important. And we talk a lot in the class about the gathering of defensive intelligence. And we role play that. We have you do tactical questioning many, many times because that's the key thing. You mentioned knowing who belongs in the neighborhood. Well, if we're out running a checkpoint and we're talking to everybody and we're saying, hey, what have you seen on the road? Where did you come from? What was your path and what were the conditions along the way? You're beginning to gather that pattern of information. And if you have a guy in a black pickup truck who skirts one of your checkpoints, and then that black pickup truck rolls up and tries to make it to your entry control point. And then later on, somebody else tells you that, hey, there was an attack and there was a black pickup truck around. Now you've got a pretty good idea that black pickup truck is a problem and you need to develop a plan to address it. You have to constantly be developing the defensive threat intelligence in your area. And that's going to be ongoing. It's never going to stop. So we teach some real basic skills on that, from observation posts and listening posts to radio monitoring to actually getting out and talking to people while you're out on patrols and conducting tactical questioning to kind of learn what's happening and who's seen what. If 10 different people tell you about a group of guys on motorcycles that are riding around robbing people, maybe your guys should start looking for guys on motorcycles. So it's all about gathering that local picture, learning, just like you pointed out, what one thing does not fit in. What's that mindset or that mode of clothing and dress or whatever that doesn't fit into my neighborhood? I need to respond to that. It's just an application of Marine Corps combat hunter to our environment of civilian self-defense.
And I would add to that, that when you're talking about intelligence, you're not talking about, you know, satellites and all that other stuff. You may have some drones. You may have eyeballs on top of a hill. You may have eyeballs on top of a tower. You may put people on top of houses that are on high points in your neighborhood. It depends on the terrain that's around you. I saw every concatenation that you can think of where they would put eyeballs on the highest point in every part of the country, all the way down to Basra. They were doing this, right? And they were doing it because, number one, they wanted to know when the American troops were going to be around. Number two, they wanted to know if there was going to be other tribes coming around, especially when the fuel ran out. And then they wanted to know, more importantly, what was the movement and activity in those areas around them at night during the day. And they were literally taking notes on traffic that was going around their area. In fact, one of the local leaders, the Kurds did this a lot. They would put somebody in a high point. They would watch this area day and night, and they would literally take notes of any activity, even cars. They would count the cars per hour. They would count the number of trucks. They would count what kind of trucks. I mean, they went into excruciating detail, and I couldn't figure out why they were doing it. And so I finally asked one of the local sheikhs, I'm like, why are you guys taking traffic, you know, document traffic patterns? He goes, because we know when the Iranians come through, because there's always an uptick in SUVs and heavy trucks when there's an Iranian presence here and they're moving down to Baghdad. And we track that so we can track that they go all the way through our areas and they don't stop here. And the same with the Turks. And again, this goes back to their history, which I thought was interesting, because the Kurds and the Turks, the Turks hate the Kurds. Pretty much everybody hates the Kurds, but the Turks hate the Kurds and sort of the Persians for whatever reason. There's a lot of history there, and I don't want to go into that. But the point was, is they were so adept at understanding their enemy and their environment that they could tell which faction, which culture was going through their area. That's how adept I think we're going to have to be at this once we kick this off. And I can't emphasize enough that good intelligence is going to be the difference between life and death in some cases, especially when you're talking about all these military age males that are in this country. We have this genre in our country. And Joe, you could talk through this a hell of a lot better than I can, so I'll tee it up for you. But we have this genre and this culture in our country to look at people and then not pay attention to them. And we have to, if you're going to survive this, you have to get to the place where you look people up and down. You figure out who they are by looking at them. You figure out their intention by looking at them, and you make a character call. And if you think there's any even possibility that they're hostile, you keep eye contact with them and you keep visual contact on them at all times. That's not something we do here. It's not something we do in the Western world at all, because we live in a trust society where we can trust that most people are going to be peaceful. That those days are over forever. So I'll just leave it there, Joe, because I know that you know where I'm going with that.
No, that's actually a key point. And really, the time to begin your defensive threat intelligence gathering is right now. Right now, you have the benefit of the internet and social media to tell you who the bad guys in your neighborhood are. Trust me, they'll tell you. Just go look at their Facebook feed or their X.com feed or whatever, and start identifying the folks in your local area who are potentially a problem. Try to find photos of them, get to know what they look like and who they are. Because when you see them 2 weeks after the lights go out poking around your neighborhood, you might want to be a little more prepared with them. It all begins, and we talk about this in the class, but everything that you do begins with a very thorough area study. One of the best resources for that is Mike Shelby's book, The Area Study Handbook. Getting out there and learning every aspect of the terrain where you live. You talked about key terrain earlier. We actually go through that. I'm old enough that when I was in the Marine Corps, we called it COCO instead of this weird COCA they have now. I don't know why, because COCO is so much easier to remember. You know, key terrain, observation, fields of fire, cover and concealment, obstacles and avenues of approach. And we talk to people about how to analyze that terrain, whether it's in an urban environment or in a field environment, to decide what you need to watch, what you need to keep an eye on, and where you can best do that and pay attention. So the big pieces all fall into place no matter what you're doing. And those five military aspects of terrain are a huge thing to study and know. I actually talk about it in all of my classes, right? I teach it in the field craft, I teach it in this one. I'm teaching it in the Mountain Partisan series we're going to be starting soon. Just because it's important to revisit those five aspects of terrain, you start doing it in your head automatically. We've been doing it for a while. Hey, this is a great spot for an ambush because I could be on that hill and they can't deal with it. You know, there's so many obstacles and limited number of avenues of approach, all that kind of stuff. But you have to do that right now with your neighborhood, right? What's the key terrain? What building do I need to occupy in order to protect my neighborhood? What intersections do I need to hold? And start that analysis and go from there.
Yeah. And it's most people just, again, this is one of those perishable skills that most people don't realize is necessary, right? You don't, we don't even evaluate people in our area, people in front of us. We just, it's fire and forget, right? We go to the mall, we casually look around. We don't really look at people. We don't really, you know, gauge, are they friendly? Are they foe? We don't look at that. We just go about our business. We do the same thing with terrain. We do the same thing when we're in public spaces. We do the same thing when we walk into a closed space with a few people, like a doctor's office. I mean, the point I'm trying to make here and is bigger than most of us is that from now on, you have to be situationally aware of everywhere you go, even to and from while you're there and then back home. And you still have to be situationally aware. And I'll give you a case in point.
You know, Matt and I both talk about this a lot, exactly what you just said. And Kay does too. You already live in a denied environment. You need to start acting like it, right? You are on the side that they want to limit. You're on the side they want to control. You're on the side whose freedom they want to eliminate. So you need to start acting like it. Get a more secure phone. I'm working on getting one from Combat Studies Group right now. Start having better disciplines on your phone. Get a Faraday bag and learn the proper way to use it. For example, if we all get a Faraday bag and we're all going to have a meeting, we all drive to the meeting and we drop our phones in the Faraday bag at the same place, have our meeting, and then pull our phones out and drive away. All we did was tell the NSA that something interesting happened at that location where everybody's phones just dropped off the net, right? I recommend having a little more field craft on that, right? If I'm going to go meet someone, I'm going to run to a movie theater, park in the movie theater parking lot, drop my phone in a Faraday bag there, Or better yet, leave it at home. But that's outside of my normal pattern of life. I need to stay in my normal pattern of life. So I'm going to go to a shopping mall, drop the phone in a Faraday bag there, go to my meeting, drive back to where I put it in the bag and pull it out. It looks like you were at a movie and you had your phone off, or you're in the shopping mall and you didn't bring your phone in. Whatever you did, you got to make it more believable. And you have to think more and more about your patterns of life and what you're admitting, that when things start to get bad, it's going to change. So for example, if there are only ever three people at my house, but I'm going to operate as a safe house, I'm going to let two friends come stay there in the spicy times as they begin. If all of a sudden there's five people at my house and there never have been before, that's outside my baseline. So right now, start having an unusual baseline so that nothing looks unusual, right? Invite extra people over, move around the house, turn on different lights, making it look a little bit different. So,
and I would go a step further. You, on most home routers, most of your home equipment, you have a feature where you can literally turn it off at night on a schedule and on a timer.
Oh, yeah.
And I would turn off everything between 12 and 7 a.m. because you don't need it. What's the first thing most people do when they wake up? They look at their phones. What's the first thing they do, well, you know, before they even leave the house? Well, they look at their phone, they get in the shower, they get out, they look at their phone again. Look at how many times you're looking at technology through the day and try and cut that by a half. And then look at all the social media platforms you're on and try and cut that by a half. And every single month, you should try and cut that by another half until you get to the point where your phone is almost has to be a concerted effort to use your phone and you're not on any social media platforms. That's the first step, right? And the more you limit what you beacon out, the less they can collect on you. They're still going to collect on you, right? I had this conversation this morning. Assume that there's drones over your head right now. You know, people think that just because we have stuff going on overseas doesn't mean they're monitoring us. They are absolutely using drones over the U.S. They are using surveillance aircraft over the U.S. and they are using spy, you know, space-based surveillance assets over the U.S. right now. Don't think for one minute that they're not. And we have to operate on a different plane of existence to include the digital footprint that you have. You know, we've talked about de-Googling your phone and using phones that aren't Apple, like, right, Apple phone, hello. And now's the time to do that. Because look, the bigger picture right now, I don't know if you're paying attention with current events, and Joe, just bear with me for a second, because I'm going to go somewhat tangential here.
Right.
They are consolidating power right now. It is no coincidence that the FCC just approved the purchase of 200 radio stations for George Soros's companies. That's consolidation of power. The fact that Disclosed TV announced yesterday that they're talking about emergency amendment to the Constitution in order to do secession and key leader replacement, that's right out of communist doctrine. They are literally
saying they're going to stage something that kills all of the Republican senators and representatives so that they could replace them with their friends.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And what you're watching right now is you're watching them trying to consolidate power. And let's be perfectly clear. The fight is on. Whether you think so or not, whether it's gone kinetic or not, the fight is on right now. That's why we're having this discussion. That's why we're both talking about this, because it's not too far in the future when we're going to see kinetic in our neighborhoods. So you need to start changing the way you think. You got to get your headspace right, and you got to start adjusting the way you operate in public. All those things are happening right now. Time is short.
What's funny is over the weekend, speaking of that, there was a video emerged. Everyone claimed it was the Haitians marching down the street having formed a militia. And the community note was like, no, no, no. It's this known Black Hebrew Israelite group, as if that's somehow better, right? It's still a Black nationalist militia that hates everyone but them. So there are the potential for kinetic things out there, whether it's Antifa, the Black Hebrew Israelites, who actually kill people every month, by the way. They claim white supremacists are the biggest danger in America, but Black Hebrew Israelites are literally killing people every month. They just hide them. The vehicle attack at the Christmas parade, Black Hebrew Israelite. The attack at the Jewish grocery there in Philadelphia, Black Hebrew Israelites. I mean, they're out there doing things. Most of these mass police shootings we had during the Black Lives Matter things, Dallas and New Orleans, or Baton Rouge, I mean, those are Black Hebrew Israelite guys. So there's a lot of things going on out there. And you just have to realize that's what's going on. We had an interesting incident during the class. One of the guys took his phone out into the field for the night op. We were doing a night observation post, and we're showing you the value of having thermals and night vision. Well, they're out there, and they keep seeing his pocket blink, and they pull it out, and it's his iPhone, and it's the IR camera trying to do the facial recognition thing, turning on and taking photos nonstop that you can only see through the night vision. So it was a very interesting thing. And I said, well, let me just be honest. The biggest lesson here was that you never should have taken your phone out into the field for something like this to begin with, right? And it's just as bad to do a negligent discharge of your white light flashlight on your rifle in the field as it is to do a negligent IR discharge. So we were walking out on the way out, and I kept seeing this the IR light go by me in my night vision. So I flip it up, make sure it's IR light, not white light. I'm like, hey, man, which one of you has an IR illuminator on your rifle? This guy's like, oh, well, I do. I'm like, well, it's acting like a beacon. It's like a flashlight out here to anyone else who has night vision, and it's drawing attention right to where you're standing. And the guy was like, oh, I never thought of that. Well, that's why you're in class, right? We're gonna teach you about that. If you've got night vision, use it only in the passive mode. Don't turn it on into active, because all you're doing is letting the world know you're there. And don't, for the love of God, don't take your phone out in the field. It's a silly idea.
Yeah. And I don't want to drill down into tech, but I'll talk tech for just a second. The less tech you have when this kicks off, the more survivable you're going to be. And, you know, we talk about radios. If you watch the Coffee and a Mic interview I did yesterday, Matt and I both talk about the Israel pager attack and why that's significant, why that is open Pandora's box for a lot of reasons. Anytime you do a culture shifting event like that, you open the door for second and third order effects and attacks that people hadn't really thought through. Now you're going to see that through all of tech. You'll see tech catch fire. You'll see tech blow up. You'll see batteries catch fire, batteries blow up. You're going to see a lot of different things occur. And it crosses the gamut of anything battery powered or powered can be interdicted. Guess what? Anything you've got that's tech, then you should be very, very mindful of having it around you. Because, you know, if they can make batteries on radios blow up, and they can make pagers blow up, it's not too hard of a leap to think they couldn't make a Tesla blow up, or they couldn't make an iPad blow up. So,
you know, on the Tesla thing, an interesting thing happened last week that most people shrugged and kind of went on about. But remember a few weeks ago, Kadyrov showed off his brand new Cybertruck, right? Well, Elon Musk shut it down. It does not work anymore. So, and everyone kind of laughed and thought it was funny. But if Elon Musk can shut down Ramzan Kadyrov's Cybertruck, what more can they do to your vehicle?
Mm-hmm. And it's, think about it this way.
Crazy.
I don't want to go into, I don't want to get too deep into the tech on this one, because we're going to do a whole show with Chris on tech. The what I really want to get into is comms, because we haven't talked comms yet. So we'll do that. But look, if you have a new car from 2015 on, assume it's sending data. We've talked about that, I think, pretty much ad nauseum. So keep that in mind. If your tech is new, especially if you're one of those people that goes out and buys the latest and greatest stuff, everything that you have is collecting on you. Everything. So just start from that premise and then start eliminating as much as possible.
And also, look at your new truck or your new car and how much it tries to argue with you about how you're going to operate it. So,
oh my God. Yeah.
Mrs. Tactical Wisdom gets mad at her car because if she crosses the white line one too many times in the construction zone, it pops up on the screen that says, maybe you should take a break. I mean, the nanny state is alive and well in vehicles right now. So
I turned to, well, it's like, so I bought, one of the new Broncos, right? When they, I have an old, the old one, I have a new one, right? And the thing I like about the old one is it's like a Volkswagen, right? You're never quite in control of the damn thing, which makes it an e-ticket ride all the time. The new ones, though, they have an argument with themselves just to shift, right? Because they've set the engine and the transmission. They've set it up so that it's designed to get to the highest gear as quick as possible for fuel efficiency and the automatic shut off start, that whole function, then the rear seat alerts, then the passenger side airbag. When you look at all the shit that's running in your car at any one time, it's no wonder why the batteries, you know, die after 2 years. It's because they have all of these different sensors going all the time. And they have Wi-Fi in cars now, and they want to be able to shut everything down, and they want to turn off everything after 2015, older than 2015. They want to shut it all off so you can't use it entirely. And all of that's so they have the ability to shut you down any time through a social scoring system. That's the whole game plan anyway. So,
well, and they're claiming they're going to tie it to an alcohol ignition interlock. Well, first of all, I shouldn't have to prove to my car anything, right? That's not how crimes work in America. We don't have to prove that we're innocent before things work for us, right? So they're using that as the excuse for the remote shutoff of your vehicle, but they're going to be able to remotely shut off your vehicle anytime they want to. And you need to understand that and realize the environment you live in. You actually live in a police state. It's just one that sounds benevolent. And I think that throughout history, there are so many guys who have pointed out that the biggest travesties of freedom and liberty have always come in the name of safety. Well, we're just trying to make it safer for the children. We're just trying to make it safer for the people driving down the road. You don't want Aunt Susie to get run over by a drunk driver, do you? What kind of a terrible Nazi are you? But they always use the word safety and emergency as reasons to usher in the biggest limitations on your freedom. Mm-hmm. Don't play their game. Get you an old truck and keep it.
Yep. And I will tell you that older vehicles, especially vehicles from 70 on back, they're extremely hard to buy right now. And they are very, very pricey because everybody's figured out what's coming. So anyway, I don't want to belabor that point. Let's move on to comps because we got about 20 minutes left. And I know we still got two more topics to talk after that. So where do you want to start on comps?
Well, first thing is have one. So we're sitting here in a quiet little camp in Montana, but everyone here has a radio. So you need to have something. For the love of God, stop DMing me and sending me messages asking me if you should throw away your Baofengs because they all blew up. It wasn't Baofengs. It was a very specific group of ICOMs that were ordered for Hezbollah. So if you've got an ICOM, unless you got it from Hezbollah, don't worry about it. You're going to be fine.
That's some funny shit, but, though, right? You know what I mean? There's a second order effect right there.
It wasn't true that people are actually asking me these questions.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, it's man, you said I should get a Baofeng radio. Now they're blowing up. No, they're not. And then understand this, that somebody said, well, if the Israelis could do it, couldn't the Chinese blow up my Baofeng? Two things. Number one, no. And number two, you're not that interesting, bro. None of us are. We're not that important. We're not going to be targeted at that level. We're not international terrorists, so that's okay.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing is that right now everyone is so over-reliant on their cell phones that if the cell phone system went down and stayed down, we would have mass panic in about 3 hours. So here's the deal. Have a radio and always have it on you and a radio plan with your neighbors. The time to make a radio plan is not when the lights have gone out. It's now. And say, hey, look, if the power's ever out for more than 3 minutes, everyone's going to be on the radio and we're going to be on channel 15 and we're going to do a check-in, you know, at 7 p.m. each night. Have some sort of a plan developed and ready. In a community defense class, we talk a lot, or community security ops, whatever I'm calling it this week, we talk a lot about the Rhodesian AGRIC alert program. So what happened in Rhodesia was the police department issued CB radios, a little bit higher power level than what you have here, to every farm. And each night at 7 p.m., the police checked in on all of the farms to make sure everyone was okay, and they shared whatever information they had. Hey, there have been 4 farm attacks today. They were in this area and whatever. Then in the morning at 7 a.m., they held another check-in to make sure every farm made it through the night. A farm didn't. The other farmers in the area would band together and send a patrol to go check on that farm. because the police and the military couldn't. They were too busy fighting the communists. So then they would go and see what happened. Oh, maybe the radio was broken. Maybe their power was out or whatever. Or maybe they fought off an attack. But there was that network already planned up, and every night they had a check-in. Use that as a great example for you and your people. Let's have a check-in every night and a check-in every morning and make sure we can reach each other. But the time to do that and practice that is right now. And you can't do that if you don't always have a radio with you.
Very true. And notice how we're not talking about specific types of radios, right? We're just
talking that makes about some people, as my friend Randy says, very angry. So we're not going to say anything about ham radio or not ham radio. Get a radio.
Yeah. Get a radio. Doesn't matter what it is, right? Even a CB would work. So
actually, look, NC Scout, Matt and I, Brushbeater, we're big fans now of the CB. He and I did a little experiment a couple years ago, and it led to us having kind of a breakthrough in the use of CB for preparedness communications. There's been a lot of advancement in technology, and you can get some pretty advanced handheld CBs that have some neat features that nothing else has. I'll just say this. Take one of our radio classes, either my Communications for Preparedness or Matt's RTO course, and you will learn some really cool things about CB that you didn't know before. So,
yeah. And the other thing I'll say is, and I'm going to put this out for all the ham radio guys out there, because you guys can't help yourselves. If you start talking specific radios, I'm going to fucking mute you, because that's like having a commo in front of me saying, and I ask very simple questions, Dan Commander, right? Do my radios work? Well, sir, this radio doesn't do X, and the Singar's Mode 2 doesn't work. I'm like, does my radio work or not? No, sir. Get out of my sight until it does. I don't care what kind of radio it is. That should be your mindset.
The problem is what kind it is. Just make it happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And that should be your mindset. We too often in these conversations, people get wrapped up in what kind of radio to buy, what kind of radio to have, how much, how long my antenna should be, how long the cord should be or the cable should be to the antenna, and how long the ground wire should be. Look, most people aren't going to know any of that. So I would say start with a radio that you can afford, and then work your way up from there and keep it.
Well, that's really important too, because there's a classic example to be learned from the old film, A Bridge Too Far. The radio guys were having a discussion about whether or not their radios were even going to work when they hit the ground in the Netherlands because of the geography. And they never tested, and they just said, well, we'll just see. And of course, what happens, they land and none of the radios work. They can't make contact with anyone more than a mile away. If you don't have a plan, and then you and your people test it to make sure it works, it's never going to work. Right. You have to do that now, because when the lights go out, it's not the time to find out, oh, this really cool radio plan we have is not going to work. We have to come up with something new from scratch when we can't communicate with each other. You need to have something happen. And Phoenix Extra Circus, I'm sorry, but there probably is not a chance for a virtual RTO course, because unfortunately people suck and people record those things and put them out for free. And then we never have a class again. So sorry, we're not going to do a virtual one.
Yeah. And the other thing with virtual too is there's something to be said for being in the room. And I could tell you, so I'll give you a case of point. I haven't worked on a radio in 20 years, and Troop and I sat here and I was programming the AR-152s, which, by the way, I have a bunch of them now because of Matt, right? I've got the
BioTrain,
I got the UV5Rs. I've got a couple of TYTs. I've got some DMR radios. I've got a host of radios now. Right. But I can't replace the amount of training that I got trying to figure out how to program those radios with Chirp and how to set up a Chirp table. That training's invaluable, because it's not just getting the radio and operating the radio. It's how do you program it for your local area? How do you figure out which channels to use? How do you figure out which frequencies to use? How do you figure out, which mode to use? Are you going to use VHF? Are you going to use GMRS? And I know there's going to be fucking GMRS guys in here that say that's the best thing in the world, like VHF guys and ham radio guys. But look, the way I went about it was I knew I didn't have the time for a course, right? Because it's time over money. So I sat down and started going through the ham radio course on my own time. And I'm about three quarters of the way through it now. The point is, it's not a race. The point is, it's a methodical activity you do. And the planning that Joe's talking about is having a radio, and you can catch up with the tech, but having it in your hand is the first step. The next step is figuring out how to use it in your local area and building a network of people with the same kind of radio, so you can communicate on the same platforms. And that's the piece that you should be working on right now. I think I got all that.
Yeah, you know, the other piece of it is you have a virtual class and somebody says, well, my radio's not working. I can't pick it up and show you what's wrong or help you fix it because you got to be in the room. And as we pointed out, Kay's down in the chat, he's saying it too, that one of the biggest benefits to going to a class is the camaraderie and the network building you do with the other students. And you cannot replace that with an online class.
Yeah. And to answer your point there, Marconi, yeah, you're right. I've been doing it for, 5-6 months now? But let me give you an idea of what I'm balancing here, right? So this show, all the other shows I'm on, plus I have a day job, plus I have a business. Where do you think that fits in the priority? So, and, you know, here's the other thing that I'm going through that all of you are going to have to consider. Do I really give two shits about making sure I have a call sign when the boog happens?
Yeah.
Not sure I care. I've got
a call sign with the people who are important to me.
Yeah.
Right. Those guys know my unofficial, as Randy puts it, I'm an unlicensed ham radio operator and have been for some time.
Absolutely. I was trying to say that without saying it. So fuck it. I'll just say it. I don't really care.
What are the odds of someone listening in on the right frequency out of the thousands you could choose from at the right moment, in the right digital mode to actually catch what was said or transmitted?
I'm not really worried about that. I'm worried about all those dipshits that are locking people out on the repeaters because they don't have a code on their radio and they don't have a call sign, because I know all those guys are going to get thrown off a building within 3 days when people can't communicate. So, yeah, I'm not really worried about that, but I'm more interested in trying to soak in as much knowledge as I can and refresh some of the stuff that I did 20, 30 years ago versus trying to get the call sign. The call sign's least important.
You know what's funny is that we focus a lot on Matt's RTO course on improvised antennas, because I've got some bad news for all you sad hams out there. That great big giant antenna you have attached to the side of your house is a beacon that says, I have cool stuff in this house that you want. And if instead I'm just using fencing wire and I've got an improvised antenna hidden in the trees in my back 40, no one will ever know I have a radio there. So,
and they're not going to pay close enough attention to care either. I mean, let's face it. People just don't care. I mean, somebody who's looking to steal your equipment's going to look for it. But yeah, They're going to go after the low-hanging fruit first, which is those big, huge antennas that are energized. So anyway, that's my two cents on that. There was one more topic, and it completely freaking escapes me. I know what I was going to ask. So let's tee up the conversation around shared resources. I don't know if you guys cover this in the course, but it's something that I've answered probably at least a dozen times just in the last week. So I know, let me just preface it with this. I know a lot of you are doing food preparation, you're canning things, you're freeze drying things, you're dehydrating things. All that's great. Keep doing that. The question that's been asked to me is, how much do I share? How do I share? And we've teed this up before, Joe. That's why I'm teeing this up again. I don't know if it's part of the course, but it's going to be a part of this environment. So I'll let you go.
So what I teach in the course is, first of all, the biblical example. Yeah, we've got food, but in 2 Thessalonians 2:20, it tells us, he who does not work shall not eat. So yeah, we might have a little bit of extra food and we're all about charity, but before I can give you two cans of Beanie Weenie, I need a new latrine dug over there, or I need my old one cleaned out. So we give out food in exchange for work. I don't let the entire world know how much food we have or how much is stored. The biggest problem with that is these Facebook prepper groups, right? Guys want to talk about how much food they have stored, and they're telling the entire world what's going on. It's crazy. Hey, check out this shelf system I built into my walls where I hide all my food. Now everyone knows there's food between your walls. Dummy. Yep,
interest is right? worse.
And we talk a lot, too, about creating impressions. So if everyone in your neighborhood is losing weight and you're not, someone's going to knock on your door and ask why. And the second time, they're going to bring friends. So you need to be thinking about that and be thinking about some security around that. And the fact that you can't flaunt it in their faces that you're eating well and you're doing quite good. You have to think about that. What I say too, though, is at about your at your checkpoints and at your roadblocks when you're running them, the one thing that we can all generate in North America usually is water. Water is pretty plentiful in North America. It's pretty easy to find. I can get some water out of the ground. I can generate it and I can purify it. I can hand out water at my checkpoint. Hey, I'm sorry we don't have any food, but I can refill your water bottle. And that's a great way to get people talking to you while you're filling their water bottle. Hey, what are you seeing on the road? Where are you coming from? Why is everybody out on the road today? Giving out free water is a great way to get people to talk to you. But also say, hey, look, that's literally all we have. We don't have anything else. If you advertise that your people are well fed and have got a lot of food, you're going to have problems. So you need to be thinking about that and keep that on the DL. Right? Keep it kind of low key. Don't let everyone know what you have.
And it does. That's exactly where I wanted you to go with it, because we talked about it before and I knew there was one other piece I was missing. So that the big part of this is minimizing your footprint on social media to let people know and collect intelligence on you as much as you're trying to collect intelligence, right? We are, again, our Achilles heel, just like being in public and not paying attention. We push so much information online that we give people a smorgasbord of intel about what we're doing. I mean, just go out to Pinterest for Christ's sake and look, just do a search for food storage ideas. And people share all kinds of stuff about how they're storing food and how much food they have. Same thing with water, same thing with ammo, same thing with gun rooms. Do you know how many, in fact, I did a test one time. I literally went and spoke to this group in Texas, and I said, "Hey, if somebody's got a good gun storage, plan for your house that's budget to where I don't have to buy, steel doors and all the rest of it, I'd like to hear it." I had 150 pictures. People sending me pictures of their houses, like, "Here's where my guns are at. They're under the stairs, and I built this high speed, fake wall, and I have this safe inside the fake wall, and nobody can see it in there." And it's like, dude, you didn't need to send that to me. You could have described it. But
yeah, it's so silly, right? People don't even think about their operational security and all this stuff, right? Hey, check out this cool safe I have right up here behind this picture. Oh, isn't that neat? Now everyone knows there's a gun behind that picture. Mm-hmm. For the record, there is not. There's no gun safe behind there. So,
It's not just the intelligence piece of this. It's the operational security piece, the communication. We haven't talked ComSec yet either, right? That's a whole separate topic. And look, we could do a specific show about each topic and deep dive into them. The purpose here is to give you an idea of why we're preaching the courses, why we're talking about this stuff, because there's all these considerations that most of us never even think of, right? I would have never thought, until Joe would have said it, I would have never thought about trading ammo or trading water, or trading food for somebody to do a chore, right? I think about it as barter for something that I need from them and not necessarily a service. I'm thinking hard goods. So changing your mindset is just as important as changing your disposition. So we have, tons of topics we could talk about. And is there anything else we're missing? Because we're coming up on the top of the hour and I want to keep this at an hour.
No, I just wanted to point out, since he's in the chat, Kay from Combat Studies Group is considering running a Ground Rod 1 course here at Camp Ponderosa in Big Fork, Montana. I think the 12th and 13th, whatever that weekend is, or let me look here. It is the The 11th through the 13th. So the course will probably be Saturday the 12th, Sunday the 13th. Here in Big Fork, Montana, it's still warm enough to camp here.
In October?
October. We've got a lot of great space, a fantastic facility here. We might as well use it. So check that out and see about coming to that. So.
And where do they sign up for that, Chris? Put it in the chat.
That would be, Chris, if you want to drop a link in there, let them know exactly where that they can sign up. That would be cool.
I will, I'll post it in the comment section. So, and then let me answer one other question because somebody asked me about firearms again today. So this bears repeating. If you order a firearm through me, it has to go to a firearm dealer. Whether that's a gun shop or an FFL that works out of his house, it's got to go to somebody who's a registered FFL. Can't just go to your house. You can't go on Cheaper Than Dirt or Brownells and order a firearm and have it delivered to your house. It doesn't work that way. So, and whoever releases the firearm to you is the one that's going to do a background check. There's going to be a NICS background check unless you have a concealed carry permit for your state. That usually suffices the background check, and you can walk out with it that day, depending on your state laws. But every state is different. The laws are different in every state. California, Oregon, Washington, Massachusetts, others have very restrictive gun laws where you can't walk out the door. The gun's got to stay in a waiting period for 7 days, especially a pistol, before you can get it. So if you order something through me, it's got to go to your state to a dealer, and they have to obey your state's gun laws. I have nothing to do with that. I simply put the gun together according to spec and ship it your way. And look, if you want a special barrel, I've got a bunch of people asking me about carbon fiber barrels. I can do carbon fiber barrels. They're called BSF barrels. I haven't had the best of luck with them as a company dealing with them, but evidently the barrels are very, very good. So keep that in mind. If you want to order something through my business, that's how it's going to go. Unless you're here in Arizona, then you can just, come and pick it up. So,
hey, on the topic of firearms, I tested out NC Scout, put me onto the Lucid E7 optic. It's a blue light optic instead of red or green. It has a blue reticle, and it is legit, man. It's pretty solid. I really like it. I played with it today, and it's really cool. So it's the Lucid E7, what's that? Well, it's a blue dot, but yes, it's a red dot that's blue. So
I'm looking it up right now because I'll post the link to it. There it is. E7, right?
Yep.
Very cool.
It's a great sight.
Once, if it ever comes up. And by the way, somebody asked me too about internet speeds. Yes, I've noticed a difference in internet speeds. Yes, I've noticed that a lot of sites are dropping off. I've also noticed that there's been a lot of latency in all of the carriers. So I anticipate that means there's a lot of things going on. But well,
testing the false flag they're going to run, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the cyber attack followed by the kinetic. One thing that the homework for your area is go look and see how many data centers are building. They're building data centers like crazy here in Phoenix. There's at least 10 going in right now. Then they're huge. Yeah,
they were in Metro Detroit. We had an underground one just down the road from our house. And I always joked. I told her, I'm like, I'm penetrating that one night. I'm going in there. And she's like, and they're going to shoot you. I'm like, yeah, but it'll be fun to try. But I'll tell you, data centers are a big thing. Yeah.
And that brings up a good point because I would imagine that some of the places that you would not even give a second thought to are probably underground data centers.
When you look at the building, it says Thompson Micro Utilities, Western Townships, right? It's supposed to be for all the townships. When you look, you see the air handlers going out a long way underground. So obviously it's an underground server facility. And there's a lot of lines coming in and one radio line coming out. So one antenna. So very interesting. It's clearly a data center. They just have it labeled as something other than that.
Mm-hmm. And they're all over the place. So I found some, my kid found some dark sites for the FBI, which cracked me up. So anyway, any final topics that we should talk through? Because I know that we've kind of gone in 10 different directions.
Sure. The Council on Future Conflict has long posited that America's fall apart point would be first quarter 2025, because the election, if Donald Trump wins, the left's going to go nuts. If Donald Trump loses, the right's going to go nuts, and they're going to keep trying to kill that man. So that's really your longest date, right? Is somewhere early in 2025 that this thing comes off the rails. Now is the time to train. Get to a class. I don't care with whom. Get to a class, start training and meeting like-minded folks and building up your network in your community. Get out there and build community, build networks, and train.
Yep. Line of sight, sphere of influence. Yep. Build them.
Yes.
They will be priceless when all this comes off the rails. And look, folks, every fiber in my being tells me that we are not going to live under tyrannical government for very long, even if they try. They are going to lose. This is going to go off the rails. They're accelerating their timeline because they know that something is coming beyond their control, and they're trying to consolidate power before that happens. Look, that's not going to happen. But either way this goes, you have to be prepared for what's coming. We don't know what that is. We're not sitting here saying X, Y, and Z are going to happen because we don't know. And I'm assuming a lot of things are going to happen all at once, and it's going to be very confusing. So I'm preaching training. I specifically changed the show to talk about training, to talk about some of these topics with these guys, because when you put them on a round table, we don't get into the depth of a subject. And you have five subject matter experts right here in this group that can guide you in the right place, put you in the right situations, and help you prepare. So leverage it if you can. For those of you who can't afford it, I know we're still trying to work a course down here. I don't know, Chris, if we've been successful. I haven't really paid attention last week, to be perfectly honest. The other thing is, if you don't have a drone, start thinking about getting a drone just for local area security, especially if you're all by yourself in the middle of nowhere. But get out, make human connections. Joe, any final comments or topics before we go?
No, drones are a great idea and a great point. But remember that drones work both ways. They're going to see where your drone lands. So pay attention and be safe about where your drone lands. It doesn't land inside the perimeter. It doesn't land where we're standing. We have it land at another location and we go retrieve it. Just be smart about it. But listen, those Baofeng radios are great to own, but they do you no good in the box in a drawer. Get them out, get them programmed, and be ready for when it happens. October 7th is right around the corner. So yeah. I would look for something kinetic from the Palestinian stand boys on that day. So
I wasn't going to make a prediction, but I would tend to agree with you on that one. So
yeah.
Yeah, there's always somebody in the chat that's got their hackles up. So that the hams. I saw a couple of comments now from Ham. Look, let me just put all you ham guys in place. Good, better, and different. Whether you think that you're queer about whatever format or whatever frequency or whatever, you know, VHF, UHF, GMRS, nobody cares. No one cares. No one. Okay. No one cares. I don't care. So I have a call sign. My call sign is One Tango, One Fox Actual. That's my call sign. It's on everything I own. So if you haven't figured that out by now, and if you think I need to go get the you know, certification so that somebody can, you know, anoint me with that, then you've missed everything I've said to you in the last year and a half, 2 years. So I don't know where I was going with that, but I was going somewhere witty and completely lost my train of thought. Anyway, Joe, thanks for coming on tonight. I really appreciate it, man. This was gold. I want to do this. We're going to do this again next week. I think it's Matt Everett on the hook next week. Fall week, I'm going to have Chris, going to have Clay Martin on. We got lots of topics coming up, folks, so pay attention. But if you can get to a course, get to a course. I'll post Chris's link to register for his course in the comments section, so look for it in the comments. And I'll be back tomorrow on Coffee and a Mic. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.